Hi, welcome to Love Saranghae with Peter and Andrea. In the next 30 minutes, we'll take you on a journey into the exciting world of entrepreneurship, relationships, and the secrets behind achieving that coveted glow. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to another episode of the Love Saranghae podcast with Peter and Andrea.
Hi.
Today's podcast is going to be very personal. It's titled, Finding the Courage to Speak. So many of you have already figured out that my wife speaks with a speech impediment. And it's because she lost her hearing in her right ear at the age of 2. She's had to deal with a lot of challenges and obstacles along the way to get to where she is here, where she is today. And we're going to talk about that. I'm going to go in depth. And we're doing this because there are so many people in the world today that have overcome challenges or have challenges before them that they need to overcome. And the seeds of change are sown when one finds the courage to speak. So we're going to speak about it. Okay, so Andrea, the mic will go to you. Let's start from the beginning.
Okay, this is a big one for me. It's not something I talk about very often or very openly. So thank you for your kindness and for being here today to listen into this big one for me. From the beginning, so I was 2 years old and I was on the phone with my mom. She was at work and my dad was home with me. And I wanted to speak to my mom. So my dad gave me the phone and I put it on my right ear and I said, Mommy's not there. And my dad said, yes, she's there. Of course she's there. I just spoke to her. And I'm like, nope, she's not there. I can't hear her. And so my dad took the phone back and sure enough, my mom was on the phone. So he said, she is on the phone. Yeah. And I put the phone back on my right ear and I said, nope, she's not. So that's when my parents discovered that there was something going on with my ears. And from there, they took me to the doctor and I had hearing tests. And that's when they discovered that I was profoundly deaf in my right ear, but they couldn't figure out why or what happened or when it happened. So we don't know if it happened at birth or if it happened later on. But what we do know is that I have about 5% of my hearing in my right ear, which is pretty much deaf, and I have most of my hearing in my left ear. But as I get older, that ear is not so good. But the main story here is that nobody really knows what happened, how it happened, why it happened, except that it is.
So tell me about how, so the diagnosis happened, and now the family is basically, they have this information that their daughter might have an issue with the right hearing. Nobody wants to hear that. What happened next? And how did this kind of percolate over as you got older?
So we are Middle Eastern and growing up, the language at home was Arabic. And right away, the doctors told my parents to stop talking to me in Arabic, that English must be my first language and my only language because they didn't know what happened. They didn't know if I was going to lose my hearing or if I was going to be able to hear for when, for how long. So right away, my parents stopped talking to me in Arabic, my mother tongue, and they spoke to me in English. And that is the language that I am fluent in now. And so that was the first thing. And then the next thing was school. So when I started school, every teacher had a chat with my mom. And my mom was a very strong advocate for me, probably stronger than I wanted her to ever be.
That's good.
Well, I mean, it depends how you look at it. From my perspective as a mother, I understand now why she did what she did. As a child, I hated her for it. I love you, Mom. It's not your fault. Okay. I would have done the same thing. But just from my perspective, every time she would go into a classroom and tell my teacher that, my teacher would start every year with, boys and girls, we have a student in our class who's deaf in one ear, and you must treat her with kindness and compassion, and you must take care of her. And play with her and don't let her play by herself.
Oh my goodness.
And so that's how I started every year. And every year I felt like I was different, but not in a good way. So right off the bat, I had zero chance of making friends the way that I wanted to. It was always, you're the pity child and we're going to be nice to you because we have to be.
Did you have a conversation with your parents about how that made you feel?
Many, many times. And my mom just truly believed that she was doing the right thing. She was setting me up for success by telling the teachers that I can't hear in 1 year. This is the strategies that the doctors have suggested. And my mom went with it. So if we look at ourselves as parents, we do what we think is best for our kids, regardless of whether they like it or not, right? So my mom was the one who was really driving that force, and I truly hated her for it at the time. My dad was the opposite. My dad was very much about, let it be. Like, if she can't hear, you'll see it on her report card because she'll fail everything. You know, let it just be a kid and let her figure it out, and she will figure it out, and we'll help her behind the scenes, but we don't need to be such a harsh, forceful presence in all of her classes and in all of her life.
Now, you're hit with this news, and now you've got to overcome it. Did you guys strategize about how to do this? Was it very reactive? It's like, okay, we'll just take it one day at a time, or did you think, okay, we've got a 10-year plan, and this is what we're going to do? How did you guys tackle the situation?
So I don't know. I was young, so I don't know what the plan was, really, other than what I've already spoken about with my mom, like going to the school. I remember being very defiant, and I remember trying so hard to be quote-unquote normal. So I do, you know, I could hear well. Like, I didn't have a problem with hearing. From my perspective, I could hear. So that's all I knew. And I didn't think it was any different than anyone else. I thought I sounded fine. I thought I heard fine. And I didn't have a challenge with learning. I was smart. I did well in school. I didn't wear a hearing aid. I think from my perspective, the goal was to fit in. And I did everything I possibly could to fit in and be as normal as any other kid my age.
I remember when we first met, and then we had our first phone conversation. I knew that you had a speech impediment on that phone conversation. I didn't expect it, right?
Yeah.
So, but by the third conversation, that impediment was no longer there. Like, I didn't hear it. It was just completely normal. Did your friends and the people close to you, did they find the same thing, or was it a persistent thing in your relationships?
No, it was exactly that. A lot of people thought I had an accent because I never tell anyone that I had hearing loss.
Uh-huh.
When I got old enough, I told my mom, I shut it down. I was like, there's no more. You're not allowed to come to school. I'm going to find my own way and figure it out. And so I just told people that it was an accent, that I was, you know, Middle Eastern, and this is my Middle Eastern accent. And everyone believed me, oddly. So a lot of that was a lie, and a lot of people didn't even know. They knew me for many, many, many years and had no idea that I couldn't hear in 1 year. But it was definitely that. People got used to it really quickly and stopped hearing it after a point.
So, you know, in my experience as I was growing up, the fact that I was Asian affected us greatly. You know, so it affected my parents, affected me, affected, you know, it was a big factor in how we grew up and how we became who we are today. Did, you know, now you're basically, you're Arabic, you're a woman, and you have a speech impediment. Like, obviously they can't see a hearing issue. They can hear the speech impediment. Any of those three were great factors for you growing up? Did they combine? Like, talk to me about growing up in Toronto, being a minority, being a woman, and having an impediment.
It's an interesting question because I feel like I have some I found a community when I was young, a Middle Eastern community that was very tight, and we were very close, and they protected me, if you will, and I felt safe with them, but I definitely felt inadequate. So I didn't feel like outside of that little bubble.
Yeah.
I felt safe there, but once I left, I felt like I wasn't enough. And I constantly had to prove myself to everyone and everywhere I would go. I had to be in every other way perfect. And so often I wouldn't put up my hand if I had a question. I just nod my head as if I understood like everyone else.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I never wanted to look dumb. I never wanted to be heard for fear that someone would figure me out. And then my mom and dad separated when I was 16. And that added another layer of me feeling not enough. In our community, in Middle Eastern community, you don't separate. You don't, you know, that's, you're now from a broken home. So all these things sort of felt like a hit.
Yeah.
And it was very hard to overcome that feeling of inadequacy at that age.
Okay, so how do you think that now you're a mother of two, and you have you're a successful entrepreneur. You've made a long way. How do you think that being an adult now, how has that shaped? How has your childhood and your experiences shaped you to become who you are today?
Oh, in every way possible. I think it's shaped me. I think it's taken me. Like, I'm 42 now, and I think it's taken me probably 42 years to get to a point where I don't care anymore. Like, at this point, I'm very comfortable to say can't hear.
Yeah.
I have hearing loss if I can't hear, because it matters more to me to get the information than to look a certain way. I've realized that my experience has power, and that my lack of insecurity and confidence and all those things was just my way of coping with a lot of things I didn't know how to cope with. And I didn't know how to ask for help. Like, I didn't think asking for help was a strength. I thought it was a weakness. And I felt like I had to deal with everything inside, even though I didn't. My parents were very loving and open and willing to talk to me, but I just didn't think that showed strength to talk about your feelings. So I think that's why with Marcus and Maya now, our children, I'm very big on communicating how they feel, even in uncomfortable situations. If they're mad at me or you, I'm really big on them sharing how that made them feel. Like, if they got in trouble and I noticed they're upset about it, especially Marcus because he's older, I want him to feel that safe, that he can say, you know, when you said that to me, it really hurt my feelings. And then I have to respond.
Yeah, he does share a lot. Do you think there's a turning point? Like, was there a memorable point in time where you started to think, you know what, I don't care, or at least this matters more to me than saving, you know, looking a certain way?
Our business. When we almost lost Aurora and I was on mat leave with Maya, I realized at that moment that the well-being of our company, of our family, of our life was far more important to me than looking stupid and asking dumb questions and doing all the things I needed to do to move us out of this position. And for the first time ever, I felt responsible for something greater than my fears of looking a certain way.
Yeah, you had to deal with so many issues, but imagine the young people going through today who don't have two parents, or parents who are not supportive, school system that's not supportive.
I will say one thing about the school system, sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I remember having, when I was in high school, I had a teacher that was assigned to me, and I don't know if she's a teacher or a support worker. I think she's a support worker. And she would come in monthly to check on me and see how I'm doing. And in high school, I was you know, I was doing pretty well. I was, you know, an A student. I was in a lot of sports and programs. But she would always come to me and ask me what my future plans were, because people like me don't go to university.
Wow.
And if I want to go to university, I have to apply as a person with disability, because I may not get in. And if I got in, I probably wouldn't succeed because I wouldn't see it.
That's crazy.
And she used to come to me quite often, to the point where I got angry with her. And I said, you don't have a right to tell me what will happen to me in my future. That's up to me. And I remember telling my mom to call the school and tell them to shut it down, because I didn't want to see that person ever again. And we had a bit of an argument about it, because my mom didn't realize the extent of it. But I remember transferring schools in my last year of high school because I wanted to get away from this person.
Wow.
And I graduated with high honors. I got into university without applying as a disabled person. And I went on to do my master's, all without the disability card. And I'm very proud of that.
And you should be. You should be.
Advocating for yourself is probably the number one thing I would say to anyone going through this right now, is you know yourself and you know what you're capable of, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't let anyone tell you what you need, because you know best what you need.
No, it's a you know, and again, that's why we titled this thing Finding the Courage to Speak. Change happens when you find the courage to speak. Right?
Absolutely.
My goodness. If you can turn back time,
yeah.
Are there any things that you would do differently?
That's a loaded question.
Why?
Probably. I would do a lot of things differently. I think I would have, first of all, told my parents from day one to stop telling my teachers what was wrong with me, and that I could do that myself if I needed to. I wouldn't have gone into teaching. I went into teaching, that's no hate at all. I mean, I loved what I did for a long time, but I did it because I thought it was a safe career for someone like me. But now, doing what I'm doing now, I know that staying safe means staying small, and I'm not available for that anymore.
Beautiful. That's a really good statement.
So I would really say that I would change how I took risks, and I would do all the big, scary things a lot sooner than I've done them.
Beautiful. And I know the one thing you would definitely do the same over again is marry that big, tall, handsome drink of water.
This young man.
With spiky hair.
That is one thing I did with you.
If it's spiky, it's right. That's all I got to say. It's if it's spiky, it's right. Woohoo! That's right.
Quite honestly, that is true. No, I would not. I think you're the first big decision that I made that was a risk and that was completely out of what I thought people wanted from me. And I just did what I wanted and I didn't care.
Love it. Yeah. It was a right time for you to break out of your shell.
Like that.
Okay. So, you know, I think last question here, I think we've talked a lot about this. This is a lot of information for people to absorb and think about, because it's powerful. Every point that we've been talking about by themselves are something to be, you know, explored deeply. My last question to you is, you know, there will be some listeners here who understand your situation, whether by themselves or with their kids or maybe their parents, intimately. They will know. What advice would you give them and how they can work with themselves or their kids or their friends after they finish this podcast?
I think it depends on who it is. If it's the children, I think it's really important to understand that even though they're little, they have a voice and that they have feelings, and those feelings are valid and they need to be considered. And even if you decide that a protocol is best for them and they don't want that protocol to happen, you really need to understand how they feel. And they need to understand why you're going to do something anyways. And I would probably also say, be flexible with your protocol. So things will change as you change. And what might have made sense for you or your children at one time may not make sense anymore, and that's totally okay. And having the confidence to advocate for your children, whether it's to a doctor, whether it's to a teacher, whether it's to a friend or a family member, you need to use your own voice or encourage your children to use theirs and support them. Teach them to find that confidence and allow them to be who they are, even if it doesn't always make sense to you in the moment.
Those are great advice. I think it hurts us to be dogmatic in our viewpoint of what is right, what is wrong, because there is no right and wrong. Nobody, none of us here can predict what will happen in the future. And to think that, well, we've always done it this way, so, or more people are advocating for this, therefore they must be right. I think it's the wrong approach, or at least it's the incomplete approach. I think many of us, including us and probably the people who are listening, they don't trust their own voice enough. Because your voice is just as powerful as the voice that's next to you, talking to you, saying, you should do this, you should do that.
Yeah.
They have no skin in the game, right? They have nothing to lose. All they want to do is give you advice and walk away. I think trusting your own self sometimes, or many times, is the right way to go.
Most of the time.
Yeah. Or at least...
I think that's the key message here, is to be...
Trust yourself.
To lean in. And listen, because we're so busy, there's so much noise, and we need to just slow down and settle down and quiet down and just listen, because a lot of the answers are within us.
Beautiful. Okay, so with that, we're going to close this particular episode. Thank you for joining us. And I want to, you know, reintroduce this phrase, because I think it's very important. The seeds of change are sown when one or you finds the voice or the courage, one voice finds the courage to speak out. And maybe that voice can be yours. That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Live Sarangay with us, Peter and Andrea. If you've enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. Your ratings and reviews help more people like you find our show. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and share this podcast with someone you think would love it. Until next time, love yourself, love one another, and love the world.